Luke Bronin, del Departamento de Estado, dijo que las sanciones contra Siria le han obligado a buscar compradores para su petróleo. También en Naciones Unidas, Damasco recibió un fuerte ataque, donde una iniciativa promovida por Washington y sus aliados se aprobó, logrando con ello una condena contra el gobierno de Assad por supuestos abusos a los derechos humanos. Bachar Jafari es embajador sirio en la ONU.
Señor Raíz,
Señor presidente, a pesar que el proyecto de resolución fue presentado básicamente por tres países europeos, no es ningún secreto que el gobierno de los Estados Unidos de América se encuentran detrás de la campaña política contra mi país. Este proyecto de resolución no tiene relevancia para los derechos humanos, ya que esto es parte de una política de confrontación de Estados Unidos contra mi país.
Amaira Asabir es una periodista y académica venezolana.
Evidentemente Estados Unidos, conjuntamente con la Unión Europea y como lo acaba de decir el embajador de Siria ante la ONU, hay una intención, pero que ya tiene una vieja data y se remonta desde la resolución, si no me equivoco, 1558, bajo la administración Bush, que fue aprobada en la ONU para el retiro de las tropas de los 30.000 efectivos de Siria en Líbano. Luego fue acusado el gobierno de Bashar al-Assad por el magnicidio contra el premier Hariri, y ahora le están colocando esta, o le están endosando o asignando el terrorismo de Estado, cuando lo señalan de la muerte de 3.500 ciudadanos sirios, cuando ha demostrado fehacientemente, y es evidente que lo han demostrado por los otros canales árabes, que han sido terroristas los que han llegado a Siria con armas, municiones, equipo satelital y bastante dinero en efectivo, mayoritariamente dólares, a través de Líbano, de Jordania, Arabia Saudita y Turquía, a través de esas fronteras para desestabilizar el país. Se espera que la entrada a Damasco sea el detonante para lo que ellos están considerando una guerra civil siria.
Sabi señala que al centro de la campaña contra Siria en la Liga Árabe está el gobierno de Arabia Saudita.
Y el que está haciendo la mayor presión dentro del corazón de la Liga Árabe es la monarquía saudí, la monarquía de Arabia Saudita, que por cierto ayer o antier tuvo un impasse con uno de los periodistas estadounidenses, uno de los voceros de la familia real, cuando le dice de que el mismo problema que ellos están planteando, que está ocurriendo en Siria, evidentemente también lo está viviendo la monarquía, y él no dio ninguna respuesta y dice de que vayan a visitar el reino saudí para que vean que no habían los problemas en Siria. Siria también históricamente se le puede reconocer, después del último proceso colonizador, como el proceso colonizador francés, de que ella no llegó a permitir un detonante de las minorías étnico-religiosas, como en el caso Líbano u otras regiones. En Siria se mantuvieron porque el Estado lo permitió. Ahora están usando ese elemento, el elemento de la religión, para comenzar, si se quiere, una nueva cruzada.
Un factor importante en la ecuación aquí es Rusia, país que tiene una larga historia de alianzas con Damasco y un actual socio comercial de Siria.
Rusia, más que China, ha dicho de que tienen fuertes lazos comerciales, muchas alianzas políticas, de que datan desde la Guerra Fría y posguerra fría hasta la presente fecha, de que es uno de los más grandes socios comerciales, si se quiere, que tiene en la región. De hecho, creo que hay submarinos nucleares en el Mediterráneo sirio, y no van a permitir esta intervención o la réplica de Libia en Siria.
Los recursos naturales de la región son otro factor importante que explica el gran interés por reemplazar el gobierno de Damasco, como hicieron Estados Unidos y Europa recientemente en Libia.
Existe en la región, si se leen los mapas, una media luna chiita natural que nace en el sur de Irán y termina en el sur del Líbano, y por supuesto que atraviesa a Siria. Hay una lucha también intestina, que es el control hegemónico del Islam, que quiere ejercer Arabia Saudita en la región, y donde evidentemente Siria juega un papel preponderante. El otro elemento que se incorpora es el elemento energético. A partir del 2000, en todo el Mediterráneo asiático, estoy hablando desde la Franja de Gaza, todo el litoral del Mediterráneo, del Líbano y el ribereño en Siria, se descubren grandes yacimientos de gas y petróleo que todavía no han podido delimitarse para la explotación, porque Israel también ha hecho una declaración de guerra en función de la energía, y necesitan gobiernos pro-occidentales y pro-israelíes para llegar a una negociación sobre la extradición y la explotación de estos recursos mineros.
Entre los actores principales en la escena está Turquía, un viejo aliado aliado de Washington desde los días de la Guerra Fría y un país que ha tenido rencillas con Damasco.
Tenemos que ver a cada uno de los actores regionales que condenaron y se rehusaron también a fijar una postura en contra de Siria. En el ejemplo tácito de Turquía, que no está dentro de la Liga Árabe, que militariza las fronteras, tienen viejas rencillas territoriales y políticas con Siria. En un caso específico para citar en este momento sería el caso de los kurdos y la protección que se le brindó en algún momento al PPK dentro de Siria. En el caso jordano también hay un elemento: Jordania responde a la corona británica, y eso está a la luz pública en la región, como también responde al Consejo de Cooperación del Golfo, y es uno de los países fronterizos que necesita desestabilizar. Podemos leer en Medio Oriente y una de las pocas repúblicas, la República de Siria, la República del Líbano, y el resto se puede leer como unos califatos militares con presidentes a la cabeza que quieren ser monarcas. Lo que está en juego son los modelos políticos. Siria siempre ha sido progresista, Líbano no siendo un gobierno progresista, y movimientos progresistas en Irak. Aparte del mismo gobierno también están los movimientos armados progresistas como el de Moqtada Sadr, que acaba de amenazar con romper la tregua con los Estados Unidos si las tropas no se retiran el 31 de diciembre, y también tenemos a Irán.
La periodista venezolana describe la composición de la Liga Árabe, el papel de Siria como casa temporal de millones de refugiados y el papel de Damasco como entidad secular o socialista desde hace largo tiempo.
Evidentemente hay un grave problema dentro de los países árabes. Vamos a seccionarlos en dos bloques: los países miembros de la Liga de los Estados Árabes, que son evidentemente 10 africanos más los 12 asiáticos, y aunado a ellos se le suman los países miembros del Consejo de Cooperación del Golfo, a los que ya se incorporó la monarquía de Marruecos y la monarquía jordana. Este último bloque que acabo de mencionar hizo una presión contundente al ordenar el retiro de todos sus embajadores en Damasco. Esa es una forma de leer que deslegitiman el gobierno del doctor Bashar al-Assad. Y el otro, la Liga Árabe también, pero la Liga Árabe también conseguimos un proceso de abstención, creo que de 3 o 4 países sobre los 22 que los conforman, sobre las sanciones que pesan sobre Siria, y la que sí ha sido contundente evidentemente ha sido Irak. Irak hay que hacer una lectura muy aparte en vista de que Siria, a partir del 2003 hasta la presente fecha, alberga a más de 1.650.000 ciudadanos iraquíes en calidad de refugiados desplazados, y hay como una especie de agradecimiento, si se quiere, binacional por la respuesta siria a la crisis iraquí. Si vamos al 2008, también el suelo sirio permitió también que se desplazara más de 1 millón de libaneses cuando la guerra del 2006. Y Siria, de alguna forma, es un ícono de los países progresistas y los movimientos progresistas árabes en la región. De hecho, ella se llama República Árabe Siria. ¿Por qué se lee como República Árabe Siria? Porque todo ciudadano árabe tiene derechos en Siria, excepto derechos políticos.
En meses recientes, cientos de miles de ciudadanos sirios se han movilizado para expresar su apoyo al líder Assad. ¿Acaso esas voces serán escuchadas por Washington? En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
¿Son alérgicos a programas de radio sin sustancia y sin contenido? ¿Están cansados de noticias disfrazadas de entretenimiento? Pues les tenemos el antídoto. Sintonícense a Contragolpe con Rubén Luengas todos los miércoles de 9:30 a 10:30 de la noche a través de Radio Pacífica KPFK 90.7 FM Los Ángeles, 98.7 FM Santa Bárbara y mundialmente por kpfk.org. Únete y démosle un contragolpe a la desinformación.
Contragolpe es un programa independiente.
poderoso contra el imperio. Palabra como misil surcando el viento.
Nuestra misión, crear y desarrollar paso a paso la conciencia de lucha de nuestro pueblo por sus derechos plenos, alimentar las raíces históricas que nos dieron origen.
Coadyuvar al desarrollo de la base social que representa a nuestro pueblo, acumulando poder político organizado que desemboque un día en una sociedad donde los niños hambrientos, los ancianos limosneros y las jóvenes prostituidas por el sistema sean solo un mal recuerdo.
Programación altamente política, ya que los tiempos duros que nuestros pueblos sufren requieren algo más que información, requieren organización.
Bienvenidos.
Blackmail, terror, and mass murder.
Check out the Inner Side radio program.
That's just the way it is.
With your host, Scooter, from KPFT in Houston.
That's just the way it is.
The revolution will not be televised. But it will be broadcast.
This is Norton Scooter. Every Tuesday, 1:30 p.m., only on Freak Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM, freakradio.org.
Yeah, yeah, check it out, y'all. When worst come to worst, my peoples come first. My peoples right here, Freak Radio, been holding us down since the beginning. 101.1 FM, Santa Cruz, 10 years strong, holding it down every time. Evidence dilated, I'm right here. That's what's up.
Minimum wage! Yeah!
Free Radio Santa Cruz is a community-supported, non-commercial, unlicensed radio station broadcasting on the airwaves of Santa Cruz, California at 101.1 FM and to the global community online at freakradio.org. We do not do pledge drives, we do not broadcast advertisements, and we do not have sponsors or underwriters. We pay our own rent, expenses, and bills as a collective, and we get by thanks to the support of our member DJs and journalists. If you listen to Free Radio, if you use the webcast, if you like hearing local programming, if you're grateful to hear Democracy Now! Every day, if you appreciate the uncensored news, non-commercial music, and underrepresented commentary that airs on Free Radio, please do what you can to support the station by sending encouragement to FRSC at freakradio.org, or by leaving a message on our voicemail, 831-427-4523, or by sending a donation to Free Radio, P.O. Box
7811,
Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Our website has a PayPal account where you can donate online, freakradio.org. All of these contacts can also be utilized to complain. Thanks for listening.
De 14.
Y los indígenas huicholes de México continúan defendiendo sus tierras de las mineras extranjeras. A continuación, detalles de estas y otras noticias en la edición de hoy del Informativo Pacífica. Les saluda Norma Martínez. Acompáñenos. La derecha chilena intentó rendir homenaje a un conocido violador de derechos humanos durante la dictadura de Pinochet. Miles de torturados, detenidos y desaparecidos pasaron por las manos del exbrigadier Miguel Krasnov, quien cumple una sentencia de más de 100 años a causa de sus crímenes.
Una protesta fue la reacción de las víctimas de la dictadura militar para denunciar el acto en honor a Miguel Krasnov Marchenko.
Los digo como ex preso político y torturado en la escuela de alta montaña de Río Blanco el año 84, mientras efectuaba el servicio militar, por negarme a reprimir al pueblo.
El lanzamiento de la cuarta edición del libro Miguel Krasnov, prisionero por servir a Chile, fue la razón esgrimida para homenajear a uno de los agentes más sanguinarios de la Dirección de Inteligencia Nacional, DINA, policía secreta de la dictadura de Augusto Pinochet.
Yo fui a los 14 años víctima de una ratonera en mi casa. Se llevaron a mi hermano desaparecido.
El libro relata que este militar nació en 1946 en Austria. Su padre y su abuelo eran rusos cosacos que lucharon en la Segunda Guerra Mundial a favor de los nazis y fueron ejecutados en la Unión Soviética. Su familia le inculcó el odio a los comunistas.
Y acá Carabineros y Fuerzas Especiales están cuidando a estas ratas cobardes que se escondieron ahí y nos han atacado a nosotros, los familiares de las víctimas.
En internet circula una lista titulada A mí me torturó Krasnov. Alrededor de 80 personas se han anotado. Entre ellas, el Premio Nacional de Historia, Gabriel Salazar, y el director del Servicio Médico Legal, Patricio Bustos. El acto fue autorizado por el alcalde de la Municipalidad de Providencia, Cristian Labé, quien también fue agente de la DINA.
Los militares derrotamos al comunismo, por eso están quemados estos comunistas.
La represión policial dispersó a los manifestantes, pero muchos se reagruparon y esperaron fuera del lugar hasta ver cómo los asistentes al acto se retiraban escoltados por carabineros y se subían a buses policiales dispuestos especialmente para su traslado. Beatriz Mitchell, Telesur, Santiago de Chile. En Bolivia, parlamentarios de la región sur debaten sobre el derecho y el acceso de los pueblos a la alimentación. Freddy Morales reporta. La
pregunta. And coming up next, gobble gobble, it's the November 24th, let's try that again. It's the Thanksgiving edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned, it is November 24th, 2011. Be with you for the next 2 hours, lots of catch-up tapes, possibly a guest call-in or two from across the country. We'll see if the folks remember, this is Thanksgiving, and so it's a national holiday, National Turkey Slaughter Day, as I call it, so stay tuned.
This one's a little more wordy. I've been calling it A Night Amongst Really Attractive Thieves.
Roll the hex to flex my bicep and check my Rolodex. Messed up in this mix while horribly perplexed. Fixed on a question left to guessing what's next. Incestual pesticides wrecking ball parasites. Fight amongst each other for the glory of the rectified. Beside the light of crucified inside the night, the time is right to fight the titan mind. Grind spine into a line. When can I listen to my mind like a find a rubber lost rhythm, crime, space and time. Truth winds at my heart, hard to find at the start. And every thought will end and then it's hard to begin. Send a message in my pen when my thoughts are in the dark. Hope to soothe the burn that fires my heart and hope it won't knock. But I'm a sound sleeper, a night creeper, a vegan meat eater, a tall peeper, and I hope to your God that I don't need it anymore. Oh, won't you join me when I martyr myself for someone else? In this game I call it war, but I don't need it anymore. But I don't need it the anointed, I see myself disjointed, the point up of the job of running around like a dog. But apart from hobnobbing with snobs and slobs and sloppity scrape myself across the concept you call your God, it's an escape I cannot choose to make, who's hiding behind this bane and cog, waiting to sell our souls to an eternal bog. But some stock-hugging mob has rose 90% of the birth defects in the name of technological progress. It's a mess of genetically modified agriculturalism and unwillful circumcision, and everyone's imprisoned, but as far as poppy the vote goes, they're gonna win him again and again. So pick up guns and pens and aim in the general direction of whoever wins. Of whoever wins. Votes to the polls, hoes and electronic tolls, and everybody knows it doesn't do a damn thing. But as long as I show my teeth and grin, smile when I walk, chock full of opinions and aggression, selling off my time to keep this meeting in session. Better act now before I regulate my pension. I'm benching about 350 with my money, acting thrifty when it's Christmas, giving gifties. Praying on an icon to lift me up and on to better things, so here I shoot them up. But I'm a sound sleeper, a night creeper, a vegan meat eater, a tongue peeper, and I hope to your God that I don't need it anymore. Oh, won't you join me when I martyr myself for someone else? In this game I call it war, but I don't need it anymore. But I don't need it anymore. And drive
misogynist anomaly. The cops will never wanna see free people painting on public property. Proprietors just shy to see what means for green ammo. I meet their assets with a suit of green camo, armed to the teeth with the need to be alive. That life's seen out the window of the car that you drive. Cause TV's eating minds behind enemy lines, and my number media is all that you find. And every page that you turn in the newspaper is filled with lies to dull your mind and put it off to later. I turned on the radio and what did I hear? Songs that made me wish that I could bleed out my ears. So I thought I found my answers written in the books. But page after page, history was written by crooks. And every book had a title and the title had a heading. Headings divided my thought process into categorized sections. Reflecting on this thought, I began to feel ripped off. Not for how I'm labeled, but for the life that I have lost. It's cost my well-being and it's cost me my time. And when I take it back, it seemed to call it a crime. But I'm a sound sleeper, a night creeper, a vegan meat eater, a Tom Peter, and I hope to your God that I don't need it anymore. Oh, won't you join me when I martyr myself for someone else? In this game I caught a war, but I don't need it anymore. But I don't need it anymore.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
That was Danielle Savage from an album she recorded about 7 years ago called Danielle Savage Live. She came through Santa Cruz. I picked up her CD on the street. It was quite a nice CD and deserves a little replaying, so that's what I'm doing tonight occasionally throughout the entire show. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides, twice weekly show concerning itself with civil rights struggle for folks who've been struggling for decades to restore, or I should really say to establish, basic rights for people who are poor and outside. And it's gotten a little more active in the last few months because of occupies throughout the country, the springing from Occupy Wall Street and the local Occupy Santa Cruz, which has created a de facto safe zone for people to sleep, something that the authorities would never allow without there being, I guess, some either political cover or real determination by homeless people to maintain a self-managed campground, which is what that really is, down there at the San Lorenzo Benchlands near Water Street and the courthouse. And that's happening tonight. They're serving food down there. If you're hungry, you need a Thanksgiving meal, go on down there. There's plates and plates of food being given out. There's a general assembly in about 45 minutes, 7 o'clock, where you can speak about issues that are important to you and give your own input into the issues that other people raise on that issue, whatever they are. There's the main focus of Occupy Santa Cruz, of course, is the disparity of wealth and power nationally and locally, the injustice this creates in institutions, sort of starting with the financial institutions, but spreading out through all kinds of other institutions and all kinds of other practices. And hopefully in the weeks ahead, there'll be particular focus on local matters. I haven't been involved that much myself in doing that, just sort of cheerleading and prodding and poking and commenting from the side, which is what I probably will continue to do. I'm a little bit under the weather this season right now, but I'm going to do to some extent what I can. My main focus has always been the broader homeless population in Santa Cruz. There's a very large concentration of homeless folks at the campground, and some of them are people passing through. Some of them are local homeless folks. I talked to Dread Eye, one of the main folks at the camp there, earlier today. He told me that more folks are coming in. I've been made kind of gloomy looking at the Occupy picture throughout the country with the shutdowns of occupies by police repression. But there's also good news. Good news, of course, mainly because of the stupid response by the police departments that somehow think they can just use nightclubs and pepper spray and brutality. And in Santa Cruz, they're using the deputies were using illegal, I should say unconstitutional, charges against Occupy Santa Cruz activists for so-called lodging crime. And the Santa Cruz City authorities were using this bogus health and safety concerns when they themselves were creating a nuisance by not opening their bathrooms and are still not opening their bathrooms, but they have finally allowed Occupy Santa Cruz to place porta potties on the property nearby, which Occupy Santa Cruz is paying for, as I understand it. But it's kind of funny and slick, and one shakes one's head as one watches the antics of authorities to twist the truth in order to restore their own business as usual, which, of course, is exactly what the occupiers throughout the country are trying to stop and change and transform and educate the community to resist and overturn. And we'll see how that goes. Again, if you want to get a direct view of this, get a heavy coat, nice warm scarf, take some vitamin C, and trot on down to Occupy Santa Cruz General Assemblies every night at 7 o'clock. Wait a minute. Yeah, it is 7 o'clock. For some reason, I was thinking 6 o'clock, but... maybe it is 6 o'clock. It's been a while since I was at one of these assemblies. I think actually it is it's 6 every night, sorry, and 2 o'clock on Sundays. And even on Thanksgiving, they're having a general assembly. Chris Doyen, who is occasionally co-host with me on this show, also known as Commander X, isn't with me tonight, he says, because he has to facilitate the general assembly. And that's something actually anybody can do. You can be a facilitator if you want. It's a consensus process where everybody gets to speak in turn, and the entire group makes decisions not by majority vote, but by a process of conversation that takes longer or results in more conversation until final action is actually taken. Though a lot of actions have come out of Occupy Santa Cruz locally, a lot of marches, I'd say more in the last 2 month period than have happened over the previous year in Santa Cruz in terms of actions. That may be an exaggeration, but there certainly seem to be a denser number of actions coming up, or that have come up in the last 2 months of the Occupy Santa Cruz stay here, which began October 4th with the huge general meeting in Laurel Park on October 4th, and then moved to San Lorenzo Park and pretty much stayed there with one brief excursion to Mission Plaza and back. So what I often do on this show, as regular listeners know, is run through tapes, and that's going to do that. I'm going to do that again tonight with my usual breaks in the tape to make my own comments, since some of these tapes are older, although I think we're going to be doing some pretty recent tapes, stuff from the last week, audio interviews on and around Occupy Santa Cruz, some of them downtown, some of them elsewhere. I had talked to Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs, who is kind of going between different Occupies and different Food Not Bombs groups throughout the country. He had actually called for this kind of a movement, although what he called for was camp-ins at federal courthouses to stop the war. And this is I think there's a lot of anti-war sentiment at these Occupies, particularly at the Occupy Santa Cruz. But it's mixed with what Huff has always urged was end the war on the poor, end the wars abroad. And actually, there's a declared war now on the bosses of Wall Street and their friends in the government, who essentially allow for a tax structure and a power structure that gives away the booty to the 1% or the 0.01%. An interesting video on the Guardian website, which people might want to look at, which I will try to announce later. Let's take another brief musical break, and then we'll turn to some of the interviews and possibly a few updates. You can call in, if you'd like, at 831-427-3772, 831-427-3772. One of the things I'd hoped to talk about tonight, I was going to have some Occupy folks on discussing the future of Occupy Santa Cruz from their perspective, but it is Thanksgiving. Folks are, many of them are out of town. Some of them are, occupied with family matters. This being the National Turkey Slaughter Day or Native American Eviction Day, whatever you want to call it, kind of a bizarre holiday, but a traditional one for a lot of folks. And so that may happen on Sunday. I'm going to make some comments about stuff, but whatever the disputes between people in Occupy Santa Cruz, there's really an ongoing sense of solidarity. However critical some folks are of things that are happening there, they'd like to see things different, new ideas, either from the left or from the right, if you will. There's, I think, a really broad ongoing commitment to continuing the process of nightly general assemblies, working on getting out information to the community and encouraging the community to speak up on issues that it has not spoken up on before. I would hope also we were establishing alternate centers of power so that people realize the meaninglessness and futility of going hat in hand to Mayor Don Lane, he's now the new mayor, or trusting in politicians like the dead Scott Kennedy, who was mayor, and he died, I guess, last Saturday. The politicians in the current political structure just do not respond. And if they do, their responses are inadequate or corrupt. And so what's needed are new institutions, which will be formed through enough people coming together to create the power to do that. And some people are saying, well, what's your plan? What's your idea? What's your goal? You know, I don't know what you represent. You're just a bunch of campers. And I'm going to try to read some responses to that particular concern tonight on the air and invite people to call in to talk about not so much this, I think it's a bogus issue. I think the issue has always been, people have always been fighting in their own little neck of the woods with their own private small issues. It's like unions fighting in crafts, separate crafts. And then in the old AFL around the turn of the last century where they would organize separate craft unions, but they could never get together industry-wide until they could do that. With the CIO and the IWW, there was no real power in those unions. And the same thing, I think, is true with the rest of us in the community. We have to realize we have to support each other on a lot of these issues, which really have to do at the bottom with the same basic inequities, the financial power inequities that are happening in the society and are happening in Santa Cruz, and the kind of deformation and corruption that produces, and the kind of pain and suffering that produces, and the kind of homelessness and injustice that produces. Let's hear a little bit more from Danielle Savage, and I'll be back. Maybe you will too. 427-3772.
Also songs, if you've ever been like driven completely crazy by somebody, yeah. This is like an ode to that, I guess. It's kind of, I call it the truck song.
Truck.
this I know, 'cause the owner's manual, my glove compartment, tells me it's so. It's gonna save me right away from this misery, 'cause my ton against your 7 grams will set me free. I'll tell them that my baby went away. I'll tell them my baby went away. I'm gonna tell them my baby went away.
And that was another one by Danielle Savage from her album Danielle Savage Live, and it was called, well, here we go, Truck Song. So, again, you're tuned to 101.3 Free Radio Santa Cruz, also streaming on freakradio.org, www.freakradio.org. Let's turn to some interviews and see where we're at with those. And again, call-in number here in case you want to get in touch is 427-3772.
Well, it is the 17th of November, about 8:20 down here in front of the Sub Rosa, which is a new sign, Sub Rosa, and the hours posted. Sunday 10 to 6, Monday 10 to 8, Tuesday 10 to 2, Wednesday 8 to 12, Thursday 11, 10 to 10, Friday 10 to 8. Who can remember all this? And Saturday 12
to
8.
Don't forget, it's all volunteer, so the hours may vary.
And actually, the Sub Rosa does have a speak out tonight as well. They have an open mic. I think it's every evening. I hope they got the time right. I think it's at 8 o'clock, if I'm not mistaken. And some folks mentioned it down at the Occupy Santa Cruz, where I was checking out the local turkey dinners a few minutes ago. So you might want to check out either Occupy Santa Cruz or the Sub Rosa tonight if you've got no place else to go, and check out the community and the company there.
And we're talking with that Sub Rosa apologist,
Scott Crossley, better known as Mutant.
And Mutant, you say that you, in your distant days as a government employee, have some interesting information about crowd control.
Yeah, well, I was recruited, trained. My mentor wrote the book on how to deal with a large civil unrest in America. And it was broken down into the steps were contain, vilify, separation, force, dissension, breach. Contain, the orange fence. They did it in elsewhere. Vilify, the bad press. Separation. Here in Santa Cruz, it was separating the actual homeless from the actual protesters. Forced dissension, which we've seen in the infighting between protesters. And now we're just waiting for breach, which would be to storm the place. And it's funny because these people think they know what they're doing and all this talk, and all they're doing is playing out into the government's hands exactly the way they want it to.
Thank you. There you have it. Could this be the future of Occupy Santa Cruz?
And Scott was sort of on the fly, so I didn't have much chance to talk to him. He's a longtime homeless local guy, and I haven't queried him in any detail about this stuff, but he had an interesting theory there, and a lot of interesting details, or at least stuff that I'd like to ask him about in more detail.
Well, it's about 4 o'clock on November 20th, Sunday. The sun has come out a bit, but it's not dropping below the horizon, or at least into the clouds. Tents have appeared, perhaps they occurred a few days ago, on the San Lorenzo Bridge side of the campground. And that was Dreamcatcher interrupting with a statement that apparently the rains have produced a large mud pool for a mud wrestling match. I count three, four, five, at least six tents over here, again, between the jury assembly room and the road, which is on the San Lorenzo side of the courthouse. And folks are also sleeping along the jury assembly room porch.
And again, it's interesting to see how the kind of the shape of the tent city around Occupy Santa Cruz is changing, or the tent community, if you will. The jury assembly room is a kind of a modular building that is on the left side of the courthouse as you look out on Water Street. It's between the courthouse and the San Lorenzo Park area. And it's there used to be more modular buildings that were actually out and about. But I think this is the only modular building left, sort of, you know, constructed. I'm not sure what it's constructed of, but there used to be three of them. Now there's only one. And there are tents now right next to it. It's kind of got a lean-to structure that are a porch that people use to get out of the rain. It's right next to the steps of the county building facing the San Lorenzo benchlands where people have a General Assembly on Sundays. And I believe yesterday there was an attempt to get the General Assembly to agree to hold regular General Assemblies every day at 6 at that location instead of facing the street, which is noisier and also a bit more divorced from the campground, which is in the San Lorenzo Park area, kind of around the corner from where the General Assembly is usually held, which is on the steps of the courthouse facing Water Street. But what interests me is the change in the shape of the campground. It's always changing because it's sort of mobile based upon the comings and goings of folks and also upon the pressures from the city and county, although no one is seeking permission anymore to do anything there in terms of the right to protest and occupy and also engage in survival camping. That's people are not asking permission and not apologizing either. They are willing to negotiate problems that arise, and I think that's being done. I don't even know if it's really being done, but it was the purpose of a liaison committee with Mayor Don Lane, who came down to chat with the protesters, but apparently made few, if any, commitments. And I was quite skeptical of the value of taking seriously what he was doing, other than understanding that he was using it as a sort of a, seemed to be using it as a political posturing tool where he could maintain a particular image before the community, increase his prestige before the campers, without actually supporting Occupy Santa Cruz in any direct way or speaking out against the horrid and long-term sleeping ban and camping ordinance, which Occupy Santa Cruz has literally forced the police and deputies to ignore. Though deputies have taken a harder line, they haven't used the camping ordinance. They've used a broader, more sinister misdemeanor law called the lodging law, which I've talked about in the past. So there's really a nice, I think they even call it a beautiful photographic essay by Alex DeRosi on Indy Bay, which you can see the growth of Occupy Santa Cruz from its beginnings on October 7th, actually, I think it was, when 6th or 7th, when the first tents went up. 4th was the first mass rally, but the tents didn't go up until a few days later. I think it was the Thursday after the Tuesday in Laurel Park, and then the tents went up in San Lorenzo Benchlands, actually near the lawn bowling area, and then they moved to the Benchlands. But the series of photographs is really very beautiful and interesting to watch, and I'd like to see that kind of history of the camp continue. I encourage Alex to do that. I think it's really an important historic document and an inspiring one. So, more from November 20th. That's just, I guess, 4 days ago. Today is Thursday, so that would have been, I guess, Sunday.
About resting there out of the rain. We're talking with Corey Hilliard and with... watch out, don't get my cold, Judy.
Okay.
So what are we talking about? Is anybody going to make concessions for us? Are you going to do anything for us? Because we are the 1%. We're not the 99%. We're the 1%.
We're the lower 1%.
We are the scum.
No, the poor.
The poor. We are. You know, come on, man. So let's talk about the real thing. You know, Karen's got...
let's talk about that for free. We're talking with...
Papa John.
And Papa John, you're concerned about what is Occupy San Jose going to do for real poor homeless
people? Nothing. Nothing.
Okay.
They're not going to do nothing. They have their mother to go to. And they're playing with Dick Cheney and playing with these people. And you know what? You can't play with my people. You can't play with her house. We're not going to do that. All we want is just a little bit. Give us some love. Give us some love. Give us a little bit of concession.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a little place to go to the bathroom. A little place to go to shower, you know? That's all we want.
Showers would definitely be good. I see that there are two porta potties. How are the porta potties?
Bad.
But of course,
bad.
Better than the bushes, but not good.
It's never going to be good.
Well, it could be good if people wanted to. I mean,
just a little bit more. A little bit more.
How long have you been here, Papa John, in this particular spot?
25 years.
And this particular campground?
I don't care about this campground.
This isn't where you sleep.
I'm not involved with Oxbride. I don't believe in what they're doing. I think they're going to hurt us more than they're going to help us.
Okay.
And, you know, I really love them. I support them all the way. But they have no idea what's going on.
You know, Scott Kennedy died yesterday. Any comments on that?
God bless Scott.
Scott, I thought he was good for the homeless.
Yes, yeah, he was a good man.
We don't agree on that one, but
you know,
yeah, we have different points of view.
But you know what? God bless him. He has grandchildren.
Good luck with his, you know, his family and all that.
The afterlife. Afterlife is a good thing.
Papa John, thank you.
God bless you.
All right.
And it should be noted that Papa John had seemed to have been drinking heavily when he gave his analysis. And Papa John's a guy I've known over the years, friendly to me recently, really hostile to me in the days when he was employed by Karen Gillette out at the Homeless Community Resource Center, the precursor to the Homeless Service Center. But it shows, you know, there's a variety of views on this. I think, to me, it's been really clear that there's been a lot of space created for homeless community, far more than has been the case prior to Occupy Santa Cruz. Now, whether this will endure, obviously, is, I'm skeptical about that, too. But while it's here, and possibly if enough people get activated and start realizing that the kinds of conditions that are being created by the current economic system and also the current system of laws that criminalizes poor people for just existing publicly and visibly, could produce some real changes. It's happened in the past. There have been radical changes that have come about. It doesn't mean, and it can happen again. There was an outpouring of hope several months ago. The occupies are still happening throughout the country, though a number of them have been closed down, and more of them are under threat. San Jose was closed a few days ago, although I don't. By closed, it means their tents were seized, and I don't know if they set up a new tent city. Yes, ditto with, Seattle is under pressure, although a judge granted an injunction against the dispersal of Occupy Seattle, which has already moved once. I'm going to read a story about that, I think, in a few minutes. And, of course, in Santa Cruz, the so-called injunction against Occupy Santa Cruz from the city is now awaits a federal court decision in early January. And I find myself very skeptical that the city is going to wait a month and a half to take action to eliminate a peaceful political protest, which, however truly, I think, productive it is also a slap in the face to their authority. And if other cities can successfully get away with police repression, either through smearing the occupies with poo-poo and pee-pee and drugs and homeless labels, misleading the community into believing that this is really the issues there, when in fact these are very secondary things that come up, which, you know, are the problems where, you know, or any kind of protest begins to occupy itself for a period of time. People who are poor and who are homeless do come there for protection and for communication, and then they come as part of the public. As they don't have a home to go to, so they often go there. So that's going to happen. We'll see if this endures, and more important, if it, you know, returns as well. If it doesn't endure, but if it returns, I don't want to suggest it's going away, though, because I don't see actually down at Santa Cruz anything going away. I see more lean-tos, more activity than ever, even in, on Thanksgiving, at a time when a lot of folks have gone home to their families.
Comment. We're talking with
Corey Ray, Dog Balls, aka
Hanky Dog Balls. What's up?
Radio personality, lovely. All right. Well, first of all, shout out to Free Radio and all our listeners. You guys are great. It's a fan base that keeps us going. And please tell your friends about Free Radio. It's a great place to be. Great place to.
Have you been here at the campground?
Yes. Well, see, actually, I started out in the beginning with X on the steps, occupying, and then two agent provocateurs showed up, i.e., Fetties. Obviously, and believe me, I can call them. And they were provocateuring. They were, during General Assemblies, they were, one of them went by Russell, and the other one, I'm not going to mention his name, because I believe he's probably innocent and all this, but he was led into provocateurship, how they're doing. Like, it's like the FBI duped that guy to shoot the White House the other day.
So how long have you been here now? From the very beginning?
From the beginning, I've been like a few days, 2 days shy of the start of it.
You're tenting out?
I'm not here anymore in the tent, no.
Because?
Because basically I don't like to see the police drive down here and two police or four police and go down there in the camp and stand there for 4 hours with their arms crossed. And I am a taxpayer.
Right.
I'm a retiree. Right. I paid my dues. That's why I don't get SSI. I get the whole thing.
Now, when did you leave the camp?
About 2 weeks ago, three, yeah.
And it should be said, though, what Dog Balls may not stay in the camp. He spends a lot of time around the camp. And I haven't seen the police down there that much. There was one day when the chief of police was there, I think because he was having a public soiree with the judges in a sort of a special event. And there was a particular complaint about the lawn blower county employee who was causing problems among the campers, and then got into an altercation with one, and then there was an assault, an investigation, and the police came and claimed to arrested Baltimore and another guy for drunk in public, though they were drunk in a tent, if they were drunk at all, and their companion said they weren't, and I was there interviewing, and I wasn't persuaded that they were drunk. They walked off. They weren't carried off, and drunk in public doesn't mean you've been drinking. It means you can't take care of yourself. It's not a way of punishing people who are publicly intoxicated, which is how police use it in Santa Cruz frequently. But it is supposed to be, you know, if you really cannot, you're a danger to yourself or others in some way, unable to take care of yourself. So, I haven't seen much in the way of police there, so I have a different perception than old Dog Balls does. But, more important, because I'm not down there as much as he is, but there are other people who have not repeated that perception at all who would, I think, have done so in the interviews I've given. So, I'm skeptical. At least I have a different perspective than he does.
Yes, you do come back to chat. I come here every day to check on my friends and make sure they're okay, make sure they haven't been hit in the head with a police billy club, you know, or whatever.
And what reports do they give you?
They don't really need to, because I sit down here and I stay and I see, I'll come down here or whatever, watch my friend's house for me if he needs it or whatever. He'll call me. He's like, Duke, can you come watch my tent and my stuff, because he's, you know, he's got stuff in there. So I'll say, okay. And I come down and watch it for a few hours.
And this is an important aspect to why tents are so important to homeless people. They provide a sort of a base and an opportunity for a person to go out and do what they need to do, whether it's look for work or get medical supplies or engage in other kinds of normal human actions and interactions. If you have to carry your entire life around with you or stash it in a place where it may be stolen, it is, or confiscated by police, it's really an incredible burden on people to do that. And so that's why I was such a supporter in 1995 when the tents went up at the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, which is one of the few tent cities we've had here in Santa Cruz, and why I was a supporter of Camp Paradise 5 or 6 years later, and why I am a supporter of Occupy Santa Cruz, too, in this regard. Because I think it is so important that people have a place to be and a place to keep their stuff, or as George Carlin said, a place for my stuff. But it's really a survival kind of thing as well, and a sanity thing as well. Also, the the complaints that Dogball is making about the police, you know, are concerns, of course, that I have, too, when police are misusing their authority or using it in their usual way of putting down poor and homeless people and removing them from sight at the request or whim of commercial interests in the area. But I think that's less likely to happen when there is a collection of people together who, in a way, form a kind of unconscious consensus or a series of eyes watching what is happening. Police violence is less likely to occur under those circumstances. Of course, you have the violence and the expense of police destroying occupations in different cities after being cheerled by the media, the establishment media, and stories have been spread about bogus health and safety problems that are probably far less than health and safety problems would be if people were dispersed, but become visible and therefore become the pretext for the kind of violence that police then do because they are authorized to do it. But the random cops on individual or small groups of homeless people that happens on a daily basis, whether it's direct physical violence or a kind of abusive attitude and bullying that happens with police, seizure of property, destruction of human dignity that happens on a regular basis. It's more difficult for police to do that when there's so many witnesses and so many people with cell phone cameras around. So it is really, and also, of course, the protest is right around the corner where people are even more well-organized to do this. A lot of the homeless people there are not a part of the protest in the most active sense at the Occupy Santa Cruz San Lorenzo campgrounds area. But there's a sort of an interaction and a network going on, and there's a process of education happening, too, among the homeless community as among the rest of the community. At least that's my belief.
I've literally sat here and watched park rangers, the TSA, the global conglomerates that have taken over state parks, just so you know, okay, stand here with their arms crossed, with their tasers and their guns, like just like jailers, okay?
And that's an issue for us which we need to talk about, too, which I'd like to see occupiers in solidarity with the people who were brutally and so dramatically pepper sprayed up there last week and that are now going on general strike next Monday and have produced images throughout the world that have actually put pepper spray into the headlines of the Chronicle and the Sentinel for the last 2 days. What are the record of pepper spraying and tasering and pain compliance holds and use of force that's been happening here in Santa Cruz with our sheriffs and our cops? We don't hear about it, of course. We get the sanitized version. We get the officer put on leave version. We get the just nothing version. But we need to know what that is, and those are things that I think with the pressure that's being created nationally and the local potential organizational pressure from Occupy Santa Cruz, we can find out through direct action protests, through demands, through confronting these officials and requiring them to reveal what's actually going on underneath and behind the scenes and what the process is. I've tried for years to get Rotkin and other mayors of Santa Cruz to give me a straight story. People on the so-called Public Safety Committee at the Santa Cruz City Council that supposedly oversees the police department to give us the facts around the use of tasers and the use of pepper spray haven't really gotten meaningful responses, can't get regular reports, get a lot of evasions, and it's something that can now be actually dramatized. If they don't give answers and there's sort of a lot of people there shouting the question, it'll hit the media, particularly if there's a large enough protest. This is one of the great values of Occupy Santa Cruz for a lot of issues, whether it's smart meters or desal or rent control or, you know, you name it, Brommer Broadway bike path or police roadway, as some call it. Even such things as the widening of Highway 1, issues that, you know, people maybe disagree on that may not seem directly related to the 1% versus the 99%, but where the power is in the hands of the few, the developers, the wealthy, commercial interests against that of the rest of the community, then this does become very important, and it is related. And it's this intermixture of issues and this empowering of people who had previously been isolated and disempowered that is really what is going on with the Occupy movement. And I think probably in Santa Cruz, too.
Hours at a time on your dollar bill, y'all, on your dollar bill, on your penny. And check this out. And they stand there for hours and they do nothing but stare at each other and talk. They talk in whispers. And they walk through the camp and they open tent flaps. And what the problem is people down here encourage them. They talk to them. And that really bugs me because I know the UN has taken over state parks. I know all about it. I know the whole scoop. And if you're not aware, Santa Cruz, get aware and educate yourself.
Thank you, Doug Balls.
Call in.
Appreciate the interview.
And, of course, it sounds a little heavy on the conspiracy theory for me, but the hostility toward people mistakenly believing that police officers are their buddies and friends and so forth, and that, you know, that there's somehow the way they can, that people can make private deals with the police officers. They can get on their good side, you know. This is simply, for me, it's a fantasy. It's not because individual police officers aren't human beings and don't have families and aren't ordinary people in a certain sense. But the same thing that happens when you get into any kind of a military organization, you acquire a different identity. And that is really what is going on there fundamentally. And unless you recognize that and address that and acknowledge it and take it into account, you're in trouble. I mean, I ran into Lieutenant Amy Christie today in a 7-Eleven. You know, did I bark at her and snarl at her or disdainfully ignore her? No. I schmoozed with her for sure. I said, "How's it going there, Amy?" You know, she's the lying lieutenant who came to first demand people not occupy the front of the courthouse, not remove their tables, remove everything. They didn't even have tents up the first night they showed up, saying they couldn't even be there. That was what her sergeant said. Finally, she relented and backed down from that position. But she's been given orders, I would imagine, and she's carrying them out, or she's doing what she thinks her bosses want her to do. And that has very little to do with the constitutional rights of the people there or even the values of the community she's in. It's just her job. And I have some pretty strong contempt and hostility towards that particular approach. That doesn't mean I have to have contempt and hostility towards her when I meet her as a human being along the way, but if I catch her on doing this on duty, I will attack her verbally as savagely as I can, in the sense that I will try to let the community rouse the resistance of the community to this kind of behavior on the part of the sheriffs, where they inform people that you don't have a right to have a protest sign with you in front of the courthouse at night because it's you haven't gotten permission to do so. I mean, it's an absurd argument. And she was making it the first night. I played, actually, her discussions around this issue, her orders. And the reason she backed down is because people would not yield to this. Again, a lot of what the police do is a bluff, and a lot of what they do is dependent on the consent of people. And that's why what our man Dogballs here, with his conspiracy theories about the police, why he's upset, because he sees people kind of cooperating with police in ways that are, he feels, disadvantageous to them. At least that's maybe I'm you know, overlaying my own perspective on it. But if that's what's happening, then I'm certainly in agreement with him there. As for the UN controlling the parks, I don't know about that.
They're counting about 30, 35 tents on the Water Street Bridge side of the TPE and maybe 40 tents on the other side, but greater spaces seem to have opened up and there are less tents than in the past. Of course, the rain might have made the area somewhat unlivable. So, on the back of the courthouse, facing the campground, there are two strategy groups. One group called strategy, the other called having to do with location. They're looking for a new location. And it looks like one group has about 25 people. The other has three. That's running at Fry. And the sun is making a nice display through the clouds. Talking to that swims like a duck bishop of the one time above water now. How is it, the camp down here?
Muddy.
And what impact has that had on your love life?
It makes it very muddy.
Indeed. Well, you know how it is. You got to get down and dirty sometime.
Anything, I mean, have you lost a lot of people as a consequence of this?
Actually, no, not particularly. I think anybody that was going to leave left when the police raid threats had started. And so everybody that's left here is pretty loyal. A little mud isn't going to make them leave.
Are people continuing to receive threats from police, or has that not happened in the last few days?
No, not since the Sentinel article saying that they were not going to raid us until negotiations had ended. So,
John Lang says, I've had it, and walks away, leaving all power in the hands of the vice mayor.
I suppose so. I'm not.
Don Land, of course, is now mayor. That happened, I think, at the last city council meeting.
Sure.
Not really, but that may be the illusion created.
Possibly.
Yeah. Anything new happening down here? Porta potties getting a little full, perhaps?
Yeah, porta potties are getting a little full. We had a big dance party last night, so they all got used frequently.
What's the drinking and dancing, eh?
No, not particularly on the drinking. No, there's no alcohol allowed.
Is that actually followed, or is it more discreetly dealt with?
It's actually more of a, like, we have a no drugs and alcohol policy, but pretty much if we don't see it and you aren't acting like a fool, we don't really care.
You don't drug test people as you should.
No. If you want to go to your tent and, you know, like, drink a little bit and come back out and you're not acting, you know, like an idiot, then, you know, whatever. Yeah. But you gotta make the no alcohol, no drugs apparent for the people who would abuse such things. Yeah. Now, you gotta make laws for the minority of the people.
I noticed there seem to be less tents than there were like 3 or 4 days ago, even after the police scare. Is that my imagination?
Maybe on the non-protesters side where we hold our in-reach meetings. I think over here is pretty much the same. The tents might have got moved around a bit, but yeah, we got a core 20 tents or so down here. Actually, a bunch did come up front.
I saw some in front of the jury assembly room.
Yeah, we still got the same people. They just have moved the tents around.
Well, any other exciting reports? Overdoses, untimely deaths, I don't know, new commercial enterprises?
Nope, nothing new from the camp.
All right, we've been talking with
Bishop.
Thank you, Bishop.
Always.
You were in Oakland you're a traveler from the Oakland area.
Yes.
And you say that the Telegraph and 19th lot came under your surveillance yesterday?
I witnessed the lot before it was occupied, and it was surrounded by a lot of police, and there were some counter-protesters who were local residents who were kind of opposed to the occupation moving into their neighborhood.
Did the police pepper spray the counter-protesters?
I did not witness that.
I don't think they did, probably.
No.
Did they give them tea and crumpets?
I noticed no tea and no crumpets. But people were supporting local small businesses, drinking coffee, and waiting for something to happen. Which it did. We did not witness the protesters moving into the space, but we did see them marching.
In Oakland last Saturday, there was an attempted and successful occupation of a vacant lot at 19th and Telegraph, but the tent city was removed the next morning, I believe, and our observer, who later identifies herself as Leslie, a traveler from the Bay Area, who may be moving down here, I understand, along with her associate, Kent. Boy, I'm outing them now. they were on the scene, and they discussed this a bit more.
And I understand they moved in, took over, and then were ousted?
I don't know anything about... I don't know anything about whether they were ousted or if they're still occupying.
That's what I read on the internet today. Your thoughts, witness number two?
Just more or less what she said. I was really glad to see what was going on. I also was concerned about that area is really gentrifying, and it's like, it's just basic. To me, it's like Oakland's become just sort of like a movie set. It's not even a real city anymore because there's no real businesses or jobs there, and I don't know where these people are coming from and what they're expecting from by just getting a few people with some money to go buy condos in that neighborhood. I would have liked to stay longer, but I really needed to go to the bathroom. So what happened was is that we didn't really stay for them actually coming in and tearing down the fence, which I wanted to be a part of, but it's like I found out later that the SEIU left their union headquarters open for people to do it, but I didn't find that out until we got home later. So that's, I'm a little disappointed that way, but, you know, it happens.
Right. Well, as I said, I understand that the whole thing was, shall we say, intimidated away by police today, but maybe I'm not really up on it. Who knows?
I'm going to go by tomorrow. I'm going to go by tomorrow and check it out.
Yeah, maybe she can give us a report. I want to thank you. If you want to identify yourself, you can. But she doesn't into you. Very interesting.
Oh, boy. Well, my apologies to the outed two. I shall accept appropriate punishment when we meet again.
Thank you very much, Silent One. Oh, and now back at the front of the Occupy, we have a new arts and crafts tent here. Of course, the evil Ed Fry is walking about. Ed, any comments about any of this stuff?
No comment.
Hey, Wayne, any remarks on how things are going here at Occupy Santa Cruz?
Hoping we make it through Thanksgiving.
Thank you. This arts and crafts easy up or mini pavilion is on the left side of the courthouse as you look at it. And we have a man diligently sweeping up the leavings of last night's festivities. Some straw, actually. And then there's a tent that covers the speakers. Sort of a sound amplification stuff. And, of course, and there's the large geodesic dome.
And if you want to follow Occupy Santa Cruz, at least some of the pronouncements of the General Assembly, you can go to OccupySantaCruz.org, which is more updated than it used to be. Occupy Santa Cruz has a report, for example, on yesterday's General Assembly. Today's is actually happening as we speak, started at 6. In the cold and the dark, impressive. Apparently, according to this account on the website, Occupy and Billings let themselves be known. Occupy Seattle and others having Black Friday boycott Occupy Walmart stores up there. Tri-Cities and Washington State say hello. Occupy Oakland took over a foreclosed home and fought off a police attempt to remove them from the property in question. These are all reports that came to the General Assembly yesterday at Occupy Santa Cruz. And then there are all these working groups that have met. There's an actions plan tomorrow on Black Friday. Apparently a trip to the Capitola Mall to protest Black Friday. Actually, it's happening tonight at 11 p.m. There's going to meet at Wells Fargo and 41st Avenue. On 41st Avenue, sorry, out there in Capitola. So for all you late night owls, you want to show up there at 11 p.m., that's happening tonight and on 41st Avenue at Wells Fargo. Monday the 28th, there's a UCSC action on campus. Carpools will hopefully go from Occupy Santa Cruz to show solidarity. Again, according to these notes from yesterday's General Assembly. And the way this is looking, although it doesn't always, these notes don't always appear with such regularity and promptness, there may be notes from today's General Assembly shortly up. Who knows? All these committees or working groups meet to try to do stuff. Camps, in-reach, tactics, process, facilitator training, media, legal, medical, treasury, location, speakers, music, intercommunications, food, sanitation, and then the City Occupy Liaison Group. And not all of them always report. The media committee reported yesterday, according to these notes, that they want to focus on positive stories, not on negative false stories. They're working online and with community to reach more people about Occupy Santa Cruz. And they're reminding folks about the Monday 28th action up at UCSC, again, which is in solidarity with the people pepper sprayed at Davis in that shameful episode. And the legal committee reported, or the legal people reported, the city has filed to bring the injunction back here to Santa Cruz from federal court, where Attorney Ed Fry and Steve Plaich have sent it, again, to try to get a better hearing before the federal judges and before the local cronies of the city police and the district attorney and so forth.
Medical committee reported they need more items, but they're in the process of taking current stock. They don't need... I don't know why they're listing what they don't need, but they say vinegar, alcohol, and head wrap bandages. The donated blood pressure monitor is missing. Need for trained medical personnel. Treasury has got $28 in personal donations on yesterday. And the SEI Union donated $100 toward the payment of the porta-potties. As far as the location committee, which I think is looking into possibly moving somewhere else if necessary, tells you to go talk to Casey or Joe. And again, you can really get, if you want to get involved in any of this stuff, you can by going down to Occupy Santa Cruz. There's a food committee. I talked actually to a woman who was doing the food. She's a determined old lefty who just shows up an incredible amount of energy. And of course, there's great food down there tonight. It's still holding out. It looked like there plate after plate of turkey and dressing and cranberries. And there was, again, kind of all kinds of different groups are meeting about different things, and they're all described online. And there's also, you can read about the general discussion and what happened at the general discussion about proposals that were made. It's really very interesting, far more detailed and elaborate than anything you can hear about from the Santa Cruz City Council meetings, which used to have a somewhat more detailed minutes, but under pressure from Rotkin and Coonerty and Matthews and others, they cut back all that because, I mean, why do they need to inform the public after all? The public isn't involved. It's the politicians who run things. Of course, I'm sure they wouldn't say that. They said it was to save time. So anyway, check it out. Occupy Santa Cruz has a lot of specifics and has a lot of sort of opportunities for people to get involved. And while you're pondering which committee to join or whether to do anything about that, let's hear some more from the interviews I've done.
Here are new signs. Santa Cruz Sheriff lied on, assaulted two colleagues. Arrested them.
Hi, Alex.
On assault to arrest. They also rob us of our signs, rights, and equipment. That's a large banner that's been put up. That's just written on the other side of the banner. But the one that faces the street says, "You are the 99%. And then there's a tent which has a sign on it, which apparently is for those who lack political sophistication, saying, "This tent is a form of political protest." Perhaps in the hopes of dissuading deputies from destroying it. So, Alex, you're taking many a photo here. I see you're photographing the American flag, which has some additional inscriptions. Commonwealth, community, green jobs, yes. Greed hurts everyone. And a series of other comments. Have you learned anything here today other than how to avoid people with tape recorders while you're trying to do your own job?
No, except that they may be moving locations.
Really?
Yeah, that's what they're talking about.
That large group down in front of the back side of the courthouse.
Yeah, about 20 people right now, and they're discussing in sort of a committee that was approved at the GA today.
This is Alex DeRosi, who's the photographer I mentioned, who did such a great job of showing the history and pictures of the campground. His concern about the camp moving, which he and I both think isn't such a good idea at this point, but it's a great idea to talk about alternative sites if that's necessary, hasn't yet materialized in any way into any kind of concrete proposals, and so it could be his concern was premature.
Where to possibly move, and then they'll bring it to GA tomorrow for further discussion and possible decision or on a proposal, but sounds like they're still, you know, in the the beginning stages of deciding where to go and organizing the types of locations they want to go to.
And why the move at all? That's a muddy ground, deputy harassment, boredom with the location?
Muddy ground, I think, sounds like it's the biggest one. A lot of people have left the location because of security issues, and they're having trouble building a security team. They have, there were even complaints about the dome, that the structures are basically attracting security problems.
What does that mean?
A couple of the reasons given were that large structures enable people to sort of cling to them and
cling like rats, perhaps.
Yeah, they're unable to get rid of the leeches, basically. But the specific example in the dome was that the heater makes it really comfortable in there, and people don't want to leave, and that is exacerbated with the problem people. It makes it even worse.
What's your view of the credibility of these concerns?
It sounds somewhat high because I know late in the evening there's so few people around to just sort of maintain the occupation that it could be very difficult to deal with the people who are having violence issues, I guess.
Seen any of this yourself?
No, but Brent Adams spoke yesterday, and don't quote me on his exact name, but
I know the evil Brent.
He had to call the police. He spoke in General Assembly today. He called the police on someone with a knife yesterday who wouldn't leave the dome and who was breaking into... I don't know if he actually broke into vehicles, but there are issues of the vehicles being broken.
What was the ultimate outcome of that police call?
They did not say, and I haven't spoken to anyone about that.
I'll have to grill this questionable Brent on his behavior. You've snitched on him publicly.
Just don't mention my name.
Certainly not. We're not going to say a word about you, Mr. Mystery Photographer.
Please garble my voice. I know you're... Very well done. I like that.
Yes. So, anything else happening?
I just can't recall, and I think I do have to leave now, but it's definitely...
Bye-bye, Mr. X.
Been a pleasure.
Thanks for calling.
Always a pleasure,
hey,
Robert.
And thank you for...
always. Mutual thanks, always. I forgot to say Noah was the speaker. I didn't mention it in my
report. He was. Somebody mentioned it to me. Someone else.
You know that. He was the
Noah
speaker.
Noah Shepherdson spoke
at the
We Don't Want to Come to the Front of Occupy Santa Cruz because of security issues, perhaps. Or just, should we say, association wouldn't be associated too closely.
And what I'm talking about here with Alex, maybe a little elliptical for our listeners, is that there was a large march... I believe about a week ago, maybe a week ago Friday, or maybe 6 days ago, where unions and movealong.org marched to Occupy Santa Cruz. But they didn't march to Occupy Santa Cruz's main geodesic dome area in front of Water Street, where the county building, the courthouse is, and where people normally have their general assemblies. They marched around to the other side, distant from that particular place, and I perhaps read too much into this, but I felt like it was an attempt to distance themselves from the actual Occupy Santa Cruz. MoveOn.org is a notorious Democratic Party front, which is a big Obama booster, and one which has... absurdly maintained and inconsistently maintained its support of Fuhrer Obama in spite of his amplifying and intensifying policies by Bush that Move On so ardently opposed when Obama was not in power. But now suddenly it's okay because you got a guy with an African-American skin doing this. It's really gross. In my view. Anyway, I was concerned that MoveOn.org was using Occupy Santa Cruz and then at the same time attempting to distance itself so as not to taint itself with, you know, the nitty-gritty and the fact that the Occupy Santa Cruz is completely illegal in terms of its camping situation, at least as proposed by the sheriffs. Haven't heard that there has been any cessation of agreement to stop ticketing, though there have been no more tickets given, as far as I know, for 647E, though tickets have been given for theft of water. I believe Casey Livingood, who's both a Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom activist and an Occupy Santa Cruz activist, was ticketed for taking a bucket of water from the county building's faucet. That's a charge punishable by up to, I think it's 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. Something that apparently had been happening regularly, but the sheriff suddenly decided, one sheriff decided he would get nasty about it without any prior warning on that issue. As far as I know, that was Casey's report to me of a few days ago. And there is a regular meeting scheduled for next, I think it's Tuesday, with the county sheriffs and the county administrative officers' office. Susan Mariello, the CAO, sent her one of her assistants to chat with protesters. And I was advising them to, you know, chat on, but push the demands of the protest, not don't allow the authorities to write the agenda. Otherwise, they'll poo-poo and pee-pee you all over the place because they... That's what they do at these occupations. They don't, you know, they don't want to look at the substance of what's going on. It would really challenge their very essence. They don't want to do that. They would rather have you, you know, turn to your representative like nice little boys and girls and go home. And if you don't have a home, get out of town. Now, it's the sort of the old story. As for this issue of violence in at the occupation, in the sense of the lack of security and threats, I've always been very skeptical about it, though I felt unsafe myself on a couple of... Or I felt upset myself. Unsafe isn't the word. I felt personally attacked by... But again, two essentially people who I would describe as acting in a wing-nutty fashion that I couldn't really take seriously. And when I saw these people again, I didn't run away from them. I mean, I didn't embrace them either, but I recognized it wasn't really a matter of any kind of standing security threat to me. That's the one I call Dirtbag Donna, which is a nasty way of putting it, but that's how she sounds when she talks to me, so that's what I call her. But people, you know, I'm a public figure. I get stereotyped as this or that, and I try to sort of, you know, acknowledge that this can happen and talk about something else or try to get back to what I'm doing and not pay much attention to the false labels thrown at me or the shit blasted in my direction. So I'm hoping to have Neil Mick on the air on Sunday, and I don't know if that's his real name or his pen name on Occupy Santa Cruz Facebook, which is another place you can find a lot of discussion of the Occupy movement here in Santa Cruz. Although it's a sort of a limited conversation between the people who like to discuss issues on Facebook, so it doesn't really, it's only a segment of that particular community, although an interesting segment, you know, I mean, it's worth looking at and giving a look to. Neil wants to sort of reboot the whole thing by, I think, leaving, dispersing the occupation and coming back and doing it again on another day, in another place, hopefully to eliminate the security problems. I may not be adequately describing his position, and if I'm misreading it, please, hopefully he'll be able to describe it. Maybe on Sunday, if he wants to come on the air or call in. I had invited him to call in this evening, but it is National Gobble Gobble Day, and that means everybody goes home and eats turkey and prepares to spend all their money tomorrow, except that there are those who are part of the Occupy movement who are doing a kind of a don't spend your money day, no money Friday. That's happening. And again, remind you, at 11 o'clock tonight at the Wells Fargo Bank on 41st Avenue, there's going to be a get-together for a protest at the Capitola Mall. That should be interesting. If I were in better health, I'd be out there with my tape recorder. But I'm still sort of trying to avoid getting strep-throated and sore-throated out here, although I'm doing pretty good tonight, so we'll see what happens. You are tuned to Freak Radio, 101.3 FM, www.freakradio.org. This is Robert Norse. The name of this show is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. And you can call in if you have comments, thoughts, reflections, confusions, delusions, suggestions. 427-3772. 427-3772 is the number.
Let's hear some more interviews while you ponder that.
You know, I believe that they have a close association because Noah is an SCIU member, and he's been speaking with the people organizing these events and trying to get more outreach. And they've actually offered some great help, like they've offered to come over and prepare meals. And so I think it's just a matter of logistics. But in that one, you know, hasty organization of that rally for sure, not to...
You don't think it was an intentional decision not to come to the front of the area where there were signs and perhaps other things? Because I did get one caller who was very angry with the union members on my show and stated that he was pissed that I played the song Solidarity Forever, claiming that the unions have done absolutely zero for the protest. But you perhaps had some different experience?
I think just the rally in itself, that they started at Water Street Bridge and they did rally at the courthouse, and now in all their promotional material, and you know, in their announcements for the event, they mention Occupy Santa Cruz.
I think very nice phrase to use, particularly if you want to re-elect Obama or something, which MoveOn.org seems to have as an objective.
I think they have a friendly relationship with Occupy Santa Cruz, and I think just the location did help, and I think they were respectful. I found it fine.
But avoided the main point of coming to the actual front where Occupy Santa Cruz was occupying.
I think it shows that they don't support the occupation for sure. That.
And this is, of course, a discussion of the MoveOn.org rally. I think it was last Thursday or Friday. Which had sort of a nationwide series of protests. Take over bridges was kind of the theory, and show the misappropriation of money for war and financial bailouts, which could be spent on infrastructure for ordinary people like bridges. And there was a big one in Wall Street around the Brooklyn Bridge, and how everybody discreetly kept to the catwalk or the pedestrian walk, if you will. Anyway, that's what we're talking about here.
You know, their numbers aren't coming out to support the various actions to defend the dome and to defend the camp in general. We aren't seeing union members
the
coming
camp.
Out.
It seems like they're using the positive side of Occupy Santa Cruz to endorse their own objectives would be my fear anyway.
Well, that can be said for a large percentage of Occupy Santa Cruz, too, that they're not supporting the occupiers and that they're just sort of sitting at home waiting for things to resolve and that, you know, they'll get back to their sort of armchair politics and turn Occupy Santa Cruz into that. So that's a big issue across the board with the movement within the membership of Occupy Santa Cruz. And then outside support has been, you know, mostly hands-off, mostly verbal. So I think it's a good observation to make that they didn't come here and have their rally on the steps here. It perhaps the dome puts some people off. It attracts other people. You know, it's a real it's a love or hate issue. But
I think that's your part of the protest at the moment, I think.
Exactly, and I think there's plenty of space here. They could have, you know, people could have stood on the grass here as opposed to standing on the grass on the other side of the building. You know, there's no ideal location over there either. There's more actual space, but there's enough space over here.
In the next week, any comments about what you see ahead?
Black Friday protest looks like the big thing coming up on Black Friday here. It looks like they've just got street theaters and a radical cheerleader outfit is being organized where some of the pretty much a diverse group is going to be donning skirts and cheering. So Friday, they've talked about going downtown too and demonstrating in front of not local businesses, but a variety of businesses are trying to emphasize locally made products and local merchants. So we'll see what they pick. You know, it's hard to choose a favorite down there on businesses, but I think it should be a good turnout. People seem really excited about the Black Friday, and they've already started the Facebook event.
Well, I could ask who I'm talking to, but perhaps you want to remain anomalous.
Yeah, because I did name names in this interview.
Well, Fred Adams publicly spoke at a meeting. Then, you know, it's public anyway. I don't think Brent would hold it against you. I, of course, will have to have you arrested for that kind of behavior.
And, of course, it's Alex Drozd. Yeah, I just like Brent so much. I don't want to spread that he's a troublemaker because he's a great guy. He's here all night, and he's dealt with all kinds of things. So, and he did say it publicly at the GA. But to make it very clear, I'm not talking badly about Brent.
No, I don't think you are. I didn't get that impression. Well,
yeah.
Thank you.
Alex.
Thanks, Robert. Always good to see you.
We have a large scuffle happening here at the edge of the camp. There are 20 people watching or so. It's not clear what's going on. I'm approaching. My turn to interview you. We're talking to
Jacqueline.
Jacqueline, you have a new radio show on Free Radio.
Yes, I do.
And the name of that show is?
The People's Radio.
And what is the People's Radio all about?
It is about an inclusive educational experience. We want to create document some of the conversations that are coming out of this Occupy movement. We want to involve the community and not just focus upon one of these issues. There's a lot of freedom of discussion that we have. So it is just about getting the community's input. We run on this slogan, the 99%, and that really needs to start incorporating more individuals.
And so this will be your first show tonight?
Second show. We had the first one, but they're on Sundays from 6 to 8 p.m., 101.3. Yes.
And your star guest will be?
So our star guest today is going to be Daryl, except for his phone is off and I can't find him. So what that means is that our star guest will be the callers that call in potentially. We also have Isaac coming to perform some of his spoken words.
The lyrical eye?
Yes, the lyrical eye. So you know what? He is our star guest today.
Fair enough. And people can call you at
427-3772.
Or they can reach you by email at...
We're setting up a Free Radio account email, but currently you can contact us at oscsurvivor@gmail.com.
oscsurvivor@gmail.com.
Yes.
And again, we've been talking with the vivacious and ever-voluble...
Jacqueline.
Thank you, Jacqueline.
You're welcome.
That man about, I don't know, what are you about these days?
I'm about this revolution.
You are, of course, the evil...
As I've always been.
The evil Leto. What's been happening, Leto?
Well, you know, we've been gathering and...
And Leto is, as regular longtime listeners may know, one of the two people ever enjoined from sleeping downtown... with a misdemeanor contempt of court threat, and he's been pursued rabidly and persistently by police and by the city attorney. He and Anna Richardson, his full name is Miguel de Leon, and I ran across him again last Sunday along with some folks sort of observing that there'd been this conflict where actually what it was a rather a sort of little incident. I think somebody threw up and somebody else got mad that the person threw up and punched him. And the campers got mad that the guy got punched. And a large number of people got involved. But I'm not aware that any more violence ensued. It was more that, in a way, people were paying attention. And that produced a lot of energy in the situation. Not the most nonviolent energy in terms of middle class sensibilities. But, it passed, and that was sort of the context in which I was sort of talking to different people around the same time that this had just happened.
Everybody's trying to figure out first who they are, what they're fighting for, and they just know shit ain't right. Shit, motherfuckers don't even know what a revolution is yet, but I think they're learning slowly. And if we get help from some of the other cities that are farther along, maybe examples might help.
Now, are you living in the camp yourself here?
Yep.
And how is it treating you?
It's good to me, but then again, I'm good to everybody, so of course everybody's good to me.
Now, in the past, you've had property with police seizing all your stuff, destroying your artwork.
Awesome.
Harrying you here and there and everywhere. What's happened in the camp?
Well, I just got started up again. I'm putting together some pieces, and hopefully we'll be here long enough that they don't take our stuff, that I could get a nice group of art together that I could put out somewhere, maybe sell a few pieces.
Have the police been generally respecting the camp?
Yeah, hey, the police haven't been messing with us at all, man, at all. They've been all good, doing what they do.
And how are things in other parts of San Francisco? You've been checking out other places, how people are doing?
I know that there's been a lot of kids traveling from occupation to occupation, and that's good, and I encourage that, and I ask them how things are going on the other ones, give me reports on the other occupations so that maybe we can become better connected, you know, better communicating. But it's real hard to communicate with our soldiers because they're wild, wild bunch, and it's basically trying to start with everybody learning how to respect each other and consider how they would react to what they're saying to somebody, you know? And so maybe that they might learn to speak to each other in more respectful manners no matter how bad of a day they seem to be having. You know?
Thank you. We've been talking with
Miguel De Leon.
Thank you, Lito. Here, we're talking with...
Question.
I got a question.
Yes, but your name, of course, is
Question.
Question, go ahead.
What is the 99%?
Iowa.
What? Are you the 99%?
Yeah, 99% is anybody under 400,000 a year, I would guess. Which probably means everybody. The evil dream catcher has gotten his dream fulfilled, mud wrestling. What? There was a dispute here earlier. What was it about?
I have no idea.
I was told something about somebody vomiting and somebody else punching the person and somebody objecting to the punch and that sort of thing.
Well, that sounds totally logical and legitimate. Whatever I said.
Yes. Well, is the rain producing problems for the campground?
Well, yeah, we got a big mud puddle out there in the center of it. People are moving away from it. I'm glad I wasn't waking up in it.
Could be an opportunity to create a sort of fishing stock.
We can use pig flies for our pork grinders, and you know, our mud puppies are at the bottom. You just kind of troll along, and you can snag one.
Might be an excellent opportunity to sort of breed the mosquitoes.
No, too cold for that.
Well, that's a good point, but maybe later, next year.
No, it won't be there. It'll dry up.
No, you're always so negative, Dreamcatcher.
Yeah, I'm very negative. Positively negative. There's no
positively.
Problem with that.
thank you, Dreamcatcher.
Okay, I'm in good cheer.
There's a difference of perspective between, may I use your name or not?
I'm not really.
No, he wishes to be anomalous. Well, we have one person who thinks that this is sort of the overblown concerns about violence, which has always been here and will probably always be here, just on and off, on a case-by-case basis. And then we have Dennis, whose thoughts are... He shakes his head and walks away.
There's nothing to do about fucking rage.
So, Noah, you're reflecting on this whole situation, and you know, at the General Assembly there was one group that wanted to, there was discussion of occupying a building or setting up a new camp, and you yourself had some doubts about that, but you also had some doubts about this area originally as a campground because, well, you had hoped there would be more unity than, and less has really developed, even though people have been able to deal with problems coming up in the campground. Am I off properly... transliterating what you're saying?
I would say that the General Assembly, it was just a couple of voices speaking their concerns with the camp in San Lorenzo Park and the long-term aspects of maintaining this occupation. And I was just speaking with you saying that I was never too invested in the camp in San Lorenzo Park. I was more focused on the occupation being on the courthouse steps. After the first few days we got there, I came to realize like that was where we should be, in my opinion. And
the deputy's opinions notwithstanding.
Yeah. But as the camp sprung up in San Lorenzo Park as a part of this occupation, I, you know, saw the merits of that and the reasons for that. And, you know, I've been willing to work with that and support it as much as possible these past, you know, 4 to 6 weeks or whatever. But I just was saying that I wish there was more unity within this camp here in San Lorenzo Park as to the meaning and purpose of this occupation. And, you know, ultimately I'm focused on just maintaining, you know, the actual like integrity of the occupation on the courthouse steps and whatever it takes to do that. You know, if people want to do other things in other parts of town, I still hope that we can maintain, you know, the Water Street steps of the courthouse.
Was the General Assembly held on the steps facing the campground or facing Water Street?
On Sundays, we hold our General Assembly on the back steps facing San Lorenzo Park.
Did Don Lane and Obama attend?
No, they failed to make it to this General Assembly.
Oh, there you are, you know. Half-hearted, what can I say?
Yeah.
Of course, I wasn't here either, so. Again, we've been talking with...
Noah Shepherdson.
Thank you, Noah. I hear you. So my bad-mouthing poor SEIU may be unfair because you say they've come down and done some actual help here?
Yeah, we've had some of the SEIU representatives come out and very specifically offer help, offering to cook meals, offering to get us porta-potties, and basically offering to do anything we could think of within their means to help occupy Santa Cruz. Which kind of gave me a lot of hope, and they've also been heavily involved in Occupy Oakland, been really just hitting the streets and being out there with the occupiers, so across the SEIU, I really renewed my faith in them. I've been a member for a number of years now and didn't think too highly of them because felt like they weren't quite doing as much as they could be to, you know.
Well, what have they done here in Occupy Santa Cruz? I mean, specifically, do they show up with any regularity? I mean, you know, or do they just, you know, use the label? I was concerned they were using the label Occupy Santa Cruz to get, you know, it's become, you know, a matter of some prestige with some folks. Hey, Joel. You know, it's a way to get publicity, to woo leftists without abandoning your absurd connection with the institutional structures that currently exist in the current Führer, you know, Obama.
Well, you know, like, they've been, you know, they organized, I don't know too much about exactly what they've done out here. I know they've offered to do quite a bit. And, you know, they did help organize that day of action this past week. But
you haven't seen them here serving food or on a regular basis at night defending the dome or being a part of any regular network?
No, no.
I mean, I'm not saying that people can't have a more limited approach. And I'm not saying Occupy Santa Cruz shouldn't join in struggles with other groups. I think they should. It's just, I think, important to notice when they're distancing themselves, or maybe distancing. Maybe that move to the other side of the courthouse on, what was it, Thursday or Friday was a, you know, just circumstantial. It had nothing to do with a, we don't want to be sissy. No, because that was the same day that there was massive graffiti on the steps. I guess it had been cleaned off the day, might have been cleaned off the afternoon before in response to the deputies. Seizure of property, seizure of signs, and so forth. So I don't know. I don't want to mislead you because I don't know the chronology as carefully as I might.
Yeah.
I was sick. I was at home. I'm going to go home right now because I'm still feeling a little under the weather.
I'm fighting off a cold myself.
Anyway, I'll get my cold. Any final thoughts?
No, thank you.
Thank you, Noah. Well, it is November 22nd, 2011. I'm here about 10 o'clock at the beginning of... Is it the 23rd? Thank you. Appreciate that. It is the 23rd. You're right. And I'm talking with...
I'm a sticker, Dan.
And, Dan, you just came from Santa Rosa, though you're originally from Santa Cruz?
Yeah, I've lived in Santa Cruz for 4 years. I went to college here. I'm originally from Fremont, and I work for Live105.com.
And what have you seen up in Santa Rosa, which I understand was shut down day before yesterday?
Well, they took our tents down. They didn't think we were too secure, and they just piled all of our stuff in the garbage except for, like, four tents, and then they let four people stand there.
So, and all the, with tents, or?
With tents, but there were cops there ready to beat them out of there. It was a really, like, really racist town, but I liked it. It was, man. It was a lot better than most towns. I think Santa Rosa is the Santa Cruz of the North. And I was a security guard. I didn't never want to be a protester. I just took a bus because I got a Facebook girlfriend that wanted me to meet her there, and I got stuck in Santa Rosa, terrified. But the Occupy guys took me in and saved my life.
How long were you there for at the Occupy Santa Rosa?
I was there for like 2 weeks. And the first week, I was skateboarding around the entire town, broke my foot. And then I sold my skateboard, and I was there for a week, really, like, being in the tent and being a security guard. And then yesterday, they shut us down on the 22nd.
At 3 a.m., how many people were there when they shut you down? Do me a favor. And I see you're a harmonica man as well. You want to give us a brief rendition here?
Oh, sure, dude. I'll give you. This song is called the Slot Machine. Give my dollar.
There you go. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, how many people were raided?
Oh, about 200.
In the letter, I have.
Did they in any way refuse to leave, or did they just walk away quietly, or what happened?
Well, I ran with my girlfriend, and we were part of the runners. And there were runners. We ran to Denny's. That's what I do. I'm security, and I'm just keeping my girlfriend secure. I just met her a few days ago. And all the other guys stayed across the street screaming. And some people got arrested for drunk in public, and other people just got... I thought I got beat up 5 days ago by the cops.
What were the circumstances of that?
I don't know. I was sleeping in a chair, and I woke up at like 5 a.m., and this guy was just getting the shit beat out of him by like five cops in the back corner where I was sleeping in a chair. And he was like, why don't you get the guy in the chair? And they were like, he's sleeping. Leave him alone. He's a kid. And then they just dragged his ass away by his head.
So you don't know, you weren't a witness to anybody just sort of sitting there nonviolently and refusing to move or anything like that?
Yeah, I saw that. And they just picked him up and told him to leave.
And everybody then just left, or they had to be carried away?
I saw a few people carried away into the paddy wagon.
How many people were arrested, you know?
I don't know. I don't know, honestly.
Any other thoughts about Santa Rosa versus Santa Cruz? You just got back here, right?
Oh, Santa Rosa is the most kindest place to homeless people. They have free food every day. The Mission, St. Vincent de Paul do lunch, dinner. They have breakfast. There's churches everywhere. I mean, it's really a tolerant city. And I think it's just like the protest was just misunderstood. And they really were mean to the protesters. But there were people that were sabotaging the protest for sure. They were piling up garbage. And I just think they were making the protesters look bad. And then Santa Rosa has this great thing about not liking homeless people if you're not homeless. But it's a great town. I'm going to move back there to tell you the truth.
All right. Well, Sticker Dan, thanks for coming and giving us the account.
What's your name?
I'm Robert.
Nice to meet you, Rob. Pleasure. I'm going to go to the urgent care.
All right. You take care of that cough. I got one like it, too.
And the Santa Rosa Press Democrat has a couple stories about the somewhat more informative than our coughing harmonica man, Sticker Dan, although not necessarily more accurate. Here's one posted on November 19th. Occupy Santa Rosa protesters are gradually abandoning their city hall encampment as police continue to urge them to remove their tents, and protesters voluntarily moving to allow those with permits to take up their assigned tent spaces. City officials expressed optimism that conflicts over tent sites were easing and people were complying with the city's eviction orders. City began distributing notice to vacate warnings to people on the property Thursday around noon. That was last week, I imagine. Notices informed them they risked immediate arrest. I think there's a later story here. I'm clicking on it now. Again, on the Press Democrat, this is a story from yesterday, from the day before yesterday. Occupiers regroup after raid on Santa Rosa camp. There were no arrests, there was no violence, there was no pepper spray. Well before dawn Tuesday, 50 Santa Rosa police officers and Sonoma County Sheriff's deputies in riot gear converged on City Hall, barricading streets and ordering dozens of sleeping Occupy protesters out of their tents and off the lawn. So it is the gentler, kindler face of fascism. Abandon your rights without the pepper spray, please. After a week of warnings, police ousted protesters who didn't have city camping permits for the Occupy encampment. As city workers filled two large dumpsters with tents, pads, blankets, and debris, two long lines of officers holding batons and wearing helmets... That's like the riot police, you know, holding their batons in their hands. Formed a barricade. There's a picture here online. That's why I say that. Between the city crews and protesters watching from across Santa Rosa Avenue. As the second dumpster filled, a few outbursts punctuated the otherwise quiet operation. You throw it in the damn trash. I'm asking you to give it back. You're not helping us, an angry protester shouted. 25 tents were removed, leaving 22 permitted tents at the lawn, less than a quarter of the number that first appeared 3 weeks ago. The police operation began at 3:30 a.m. and was the latest eviction of Occupy campers around the nation, following in recent days actions in New York, Oakland, Portland, Oregon, Davis, and San Diego, among others, many of them resulting in arrests and violence. By 8:15 a.m., as the sweep continued, Sergeant Rich Chelly told a small group of protesters they could return to the City Hall encampment. "We want you to be able to assemble freely," he said. "Just not too many of you, you know. Let's not threaten the powers that be." Sorry, that's my addition to that. But police warned that city laws involving use of public property would be enforced. Anyone caught drinking alcohol or setting up an unpermitted tent would be arrested. Food preparation tables and a medical tent, staples of the Occupy site until Tuesday, would be considered signs of a more permanent site and not allowed, Chelly said. Occupy protesters have been camping at Santa Rosa City Hall since October 29th. Negotiations between protesters and city officials eventually broke down, and police for 5 days have been going through the camp, issuing eviction warnings twice a day to those without permits. Assistant City Manager Jennifer Phillips said city leaders had a strategy in place for several days that called for officers to encourage those without permits to leave voluntarily, after which enforcement would begin if necessary. Phillips, who is acting city manager, while City Manager Kathy Millison is on vacation — our city manager in Santa Cruz's name is Martin Bernal, by the way, he is the true power in the city — was told Monday by Police Chief, Santa Rosa Police Chief Tom Schwedelheim, that he had decided to send in officers overnight. City council members were told of the police action after it began, Phillips said. Mayor Ernesto Olivares praised police and city officials for allowing protesters to vent and then patiently encouraged people to leave. He also praised protesters for how they handled themselves. "My goal from the start was to make sure we had a safe resolution to this," Olivares said. I think it worked out very well. Besides officers, about 30 other people, including city public works employees, were involved in the operation, for a total of about 80, outnumbering protesters about 2-1. At about 3:45 a.m. on Tuesday, 2 days ago, officers made 4 announcements on a public address system that the eviction was underway. Protesters with camping permits were allowed to leave their belongings, but those without permits were given about 40 minutes to gather up their tents and belongings or face having them removed by city workers. All the campers were told to go across Santa Rosa Avenue away from City Hall during the operation. "What a waste of money. What a ridiculous waste of resources," said veteran protester Tanya Brannon. She, like several others, including police, videotaped the eviction. Lieutenant Craig Schwartz, if you'll forgive me, I've got to find my spot again. Lieutenant Craig Schwartz called the action successful and defended the large police presence, saying officers were unsure how many people they would encounter. He said police expected to make arrests and wanted to do a safe and efficient job. Police chose the early morning because there would be fewer people at the site and fewer people downtown and on adjacent streets, Schwartz said. Police closed surrounding streets during the operation. Staffing availability helped police choose the day, he said. After going through the property remaining at the unpermitted campsites, all but one item was discarded as abandoned property, Schwartz said in a statement. Much of the property was in very unsanitary condition, with evidence of urine and fecal contamination. A small number of Santa Rosa officers remained later Tuesday at City Hall to watch for any returning unpermitted campers. The cost of the operation to the city was unavailable Tuesday, but Schwartz said many of the officers were on overtime. Jasmine De La Torre, who did not have a camping permit, stood with others across the street from City Hall holding a tent and watching. "They had 36 riot police officers squared off against about 30 of us. Obviously, they're threatened by us," De La Torre said. Todd Saunders, a homeless man who has a permit, said he believes in the Occupy movement also needed a place to stay. He said he wasn't surprised by the show of force and praised the way officers handled the morning action. "It's not the police doing the kicking out, it's the higher-ups," Saunders said. "They did good. The others were just following orders." He noted no one used pepper spray, in contrast to other Occupy sites, including UC Davis, where an officer used pepper spray on protesting students. Protester Carol Avril said the group had agreed to be peaceful, but she couldn't say whether anyone planned to return their tent without permission. "It sucks being in a leaderless movement," she said. "You don't know." And that's a story from the Press Democrat. Occupiers regroup after raid on Santa Rosa camp. And it's a story from 2 days ago.
And there's another, I guess there's an editorial in the Santa Rosa Press Democrat from 2 days before that. Time for a new strategy. This kind of discussion is also happening among some people in Santa Cruz. A few days before the tent city was erected at Santa Cruz City Hall, Arthur Warmoth, a retired Sonoma State professor, visited the Occupy to show his support. The local protest, not yet 2 weeks old, already begun to wane, and conflicts are erupting with homeless people and troublesome youth. That's a kind of statement by the writer of the story, Martin Espinoza, that is presented as fact and as a sort of a key factor, when in fact, I tend to think it is, I don't know about Santa Rosa, but in Santa Cruz, it is a very secondary issue that is, of course, pushed to the front to give cover to those, I think, who want to see the camp gone. What's more, Occupy protesters were geared to reinvigorate their movement by pitching tents. Warmoth, a member of the Sonoma County Human Rights Commission, made a suggestion that would seem contradictory to the driving principle of the Occupy movement, go home at night. He revisited that thought last week at the Occupy site. It's more important to have a presence here every day than it is to have people here 24 hours a day, he said. I wonder if he's going to tell that to the people in Tahrir Square. Although there are those who tell me that they actually do go home, or they would go home, except that they keep coming back because they are being forced away by the police. I don't know what the actual story is there. I know that they're in the sixth or seventh day now of a huge battle to maintain in Cairo and other cities, Suez, other places in Egypt. Well, they want to see the Supreme Military Council out of there and the real revolution completed, which I think is what a number of us want to do here in this country. And that's the kind of fundamental change that isn't going to be made by the politicians. And see, that's the problem. And that's why there has to be a new method of accreting power. I think what I'm going to do now in the last 10 minutes is try to get a brief report from activist Scope It Out Scott Graham, who I spoke to briefly before the show and probably has been waiting by his phone for God knows how long. Let's see if he's at home and able to...
Hello?
Scott Graham.
Robert.
You know, we don't have much time left on the show because I had many important things to say, and you, unfortunately, were, of course...
I noticed you're, like, interrupting your tapes every 3 minutes to give you... to tell all the people what's going on in the tape because everybody in the audience is too dumb to understand it without you telling us what's going on.
It is true. My intellect is so far superior to that of my listeners. But let's put that aside for the moment. I will talk to a more lowly being like yourself.
Okay, thank you.
And we have about 9 minutes, but maybe we can get you back on Sunday morning, although I know how late you sleep on Sunday mornings. Good God.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you recently went to the DSAL hearing on Tuesday. I should say there was a consent agenda item, number 13, on the city council.
Well, there was actually two items. There was number 13, which was to hire some consultants to get permits for the DSAL plant that hasn't even been approved yet. And then there was item 14, which ended up not getting pulled. Item 13 got pulled and kicked up to the 7 o'clock session. Item 14 never got pulled, but item 14 was hiring environmental attorney. He's one of the leading environmental attorneys in California, who's basically a whore. He mostly works for cities and counties, making sure that their environmental impact reports are legally binding, you know, that they're basically bulletproof that nobody can challenge them in court.
Their eyes are all dotted and their T's
are crossed. Yeah. And then if they do get challenged in court, then they, you know, use this guy, his name's Jim Moose, to, you know, go to court. And, you know, he has a very good track record of, you know, winning in court. But the guy, you know, he's basically... You know, he calls himself an environmental attorney, but basically what he's doing is he's hired to protect the interest of people that are destroying the environment.
So this item 14, was not pulled, and he was, in fact, hired for how
much? Yes, for $100,000.
And the
$100,000 retainer agreement.
And
so if he actually does anything, he's going to get paid even more.
And did someone attempt to pull item 13? It should be.
Well, item 13 got pulled, I guess, by Catherine Byers.
But
it got moved to the 7 o'clock session.
Did anyone from the public who used to be able to pull these items simply as a matter of course, as is the case in most city councils throughout the state? But did anyone from the audience attempt to have these items pulled? Did you stand up and say, "What ho?"
I wasn't there in the afternoon session. I was only there for the evening session.
I see.
And
so the evening session, the second item, which actually involved, what, $400,000 for a consultant or something?
Yes, for a this consulting firm, which will get the permits or line up all the permits, get all the ducks in a row for the permits for the desal plant. Because there's all sorts of government agencies, there's the Coastal Commission, Fish and Game, there's a bunch of state agencies and federal agencies that will have to permit this desal plant.
Now, I'm sorry to have to do this, Scott, but the desal is a multi-million dollar, $100 million-plus project that you feel is a major boondoggle, unnecessary, and is really being kind of rammed through the city council on the fast track?
Oh, yeah. You can't really say. I mean, right now it's being fast tracked, but it's been there for a while. Back in the day when Tim Fitzmaurice, Keith Sugar, and Christopher Crone were on the city council, I think you remember those days, Robert.
Yes, I do. Scott Kennedy too.
Yeah, but anyway, they were the ones that initially did this water study to find out, what the alternatives were.
We actually covered this, the last time you spoke.
Okay, for future water. And,
yeah.
Did I mention the whole thing with Tim Fitzmaurice?
I think you did, but I wouldn't mind you going through it again, but we only have about 4 minutes left, and
okay.
I want to kind of...
Okay.
What was the outcome, and what's the next step in this whole process for those
who are
concerned?
Well, the outcome was that the city, even though nearly everybody in the room, except for a few people brought there by Cynthia Matthews and Mike Rockin, because Matthews and Rockin have created, because of the D-Cell Alternative Group, which is starting to get traction, they're now getting other community groups on board with this, opposing this thing. Rockin and Matthews has started their own pro-D-Cell group.
So the council voted in favor of this consultant study, I take it.
Yes, and so Rockin and Matthews bring a couple of flunkies with them to every meeting to go up there and say, "Oh, we're part of this community group," when it's not a community group. Their only endorsements come from the business community, basically.
What was the vote on the council?
It was 5-2.
And the two are what? Madrigal and Byers?
No. I'm really disappointed with Tony, why he didn't vote against it. I mean, he talks as though he's against it, or he's into, slowing the process down so that there can be more community input, more study of this whole thing. But then when the vote happens, he votes in favor of it. But it was actually Hillary Bryant voted against it.
Whoa, interesting.
Yes.
So our mayor, Gon Lame, voted in favor of it.
Oh, not only did he vote in favor of it, but... During, after the public comment period, then there's, the period that the council has when they get to, make their comments about the items. He went down this list of, things in the D-Cell Alternatives Group's flyers and emails and on their website. He had this whole PowerPoint presentation as to how they were a bunch of liars.
So, in other words, the critics of this desal program, which is what, the construction of a huge desalinization plant that you feel and that others may feel and actually talked about on the station, is a great boondoggle and a way of producing money for certain particular special interest groups?
Well, for the people that build it and operate it, yes. And basically, the city of Santa Cruz, this is being put forth as a way to, you know, to help us meet our water needs during a drought. And the city itself says that the drought that they're talking about happens once every 72 years. The severity, the drought of that severity that we would need this plant happens once every 72 years. The rest of the time, Soquel Creek Water District will be using the plant in order to recharge their wells or rest their wells, so they'll naturally recharge, and they'll be, but they're not going to be actually drinking the water in Soquel. They're going to be given fresh water from our system, and if the desal plant is built on the west side of Santa Cruz, which is now the plant, everybody on the west side of Santa Cruz will be drinking this desalinated water.
Which you think has, I've never heard any criticism of desalinated water.
Well, desalinated water does have a few chemicals in it that are thought by many to be unsafe, and some of these chemicals don't have, haven't been tested enough to have any kind of limit as to what the safe level of those chemicals are.
So what's the status now? Money has been paid to the consultants to kind of work on the permits. What's the next step in this process for those who support it and those who oppose it?
Well, the next thing that's going to happen, yeah, I mean, there's other things that will probably happen in between now and then that probably will come back for more money. But the next big thing that's going to happen is the draft environmental impact report will come out. And then the public will get, you know, probably the shortest time legally allowed to comment on it, because that's what you do in an environmental impact report. The public and government agencies then put comments in to try to find, you know, the chinks in the armor. And then the final environmental impact report then answers all those questions and tries to fill in all of the, you know, gray areas, so to say. And once the final comes in, it will be when the city council will, they'll vote then to accept the environmental impact report, and then they could, after they have accepted the environmental impact report, then they could approve the project.
So now, is there still substantial opposition to this?
Oh, yes. And, you know, and the problem that I have with this whole process is, you know, because the city's trying to, you know, many of the council members are trying to say they haven't made up their minds yet. They're waiting to see what the environmental impact report says and da-da-da-da-da. The problem I have with it is that, you know, having watched the city for years, is that once they get to this point of actually doing an environmental impact report, the train has left the station.
That's what you were saying before when you spoke about this. So what's next up for those who want to get more information about it or oppose it or, you know, who want to join, you know, with our former mayors, Mike Rockin and Cynthia Matthews, and in the memory of Scott Kennedy, of course.
Well, if you want to join with Rockin and Matthews, then I would suggest, you know, taking a few yoga courses, sticking your head up your ass, and, you know, then that would be a good way to join those people. But, you know, you can, there's the group D-Cell Alternatives has a website, which is dcellalternatives.org.
Mm-hmm. And so more can be found about their meetings and so forth and what's cooking with that. I'm hoping we can get to an update with you on the Brommer Broadway update, because there's been some, you know, some new actions from the Coastal Commission staff, as I understand it. Can't talk about it now because I'm over time, but...
You're not over. Uncle Dennis showed up yet, or what?
Uncle Dennis has not showed up, but I don't want him your report
to
be cut short.
Well, lock the door, jeez.
I could, but then there'd be pounding. It would be a disturbance. So,
okay.
And we wouldn't want that to happen, you know. Now, after all, I wouldn't want to occupy free radio, you know.
But anyway, it's dcellalternatives.org.
And we can talk more about these other issues maybe on Sunday. Maybe we'll wake
possibly,
you up.
Well, yes.
If we can get you to avoid repeating yourself endlessly.
Well, I'm sorry, Robert. You know, I don't have all these cheat sheets like you do.
Time to make some.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, thank you, Scott.
All right, have a good evening.
You too, man. And that was Scott Graham. I call him Scope It Out Scott. persistent critic of some city council activity, and even a critic of mine on occasion. Can you imagine? You are tuned to Freak Radio 101.3 FM, and I will be turning the mic over to Uncle Dennis if he shows up. But it is Thanksgiving, and I'm wondering if the good uncle has called uncle for the season and perhaps gone underground or buried himself in, you know, some sort of vegetarian turkey activity, if he's a vegetarian or not. Anyway, while we're pondering...